Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
Today's Blue Collar BS episode is all about grit, growth, and a little grease. We're sitting down with Sam DeWitt, a self-proclaimed millennial zillennial, master mechanic, and a guy who went from zero CNC experience to running, fixing, and teaching it like a pro. His journey's a ride, starting in aerospace, getting tossed into the deep end with lasers and CNCs, and turning hard lessons into serious career wins. Now he's paying it forward, mentoring everyone from a 19-year-old apprentice to seasoned boomers, and showing that today's trades are more about busted parts, its leadership, technology, and finding smarter ways to keep America running.
You'll hear about servant leadership, training the next generation, and why sometimes the fix is as simple as checking if it's plugged in.
Real, raw, no BS, Sam's story is a playbook for anyone chasing success in the manufacturing and trades world.
So let's go! Welcome back, everyone, to this episode of Blue Collar BS. How you doing today, Brad?
I am fantastic, Mr. Stephen Doyle. How are you today?
You know, today it's sunny out. It's a fantastic day because it's not too hot, not too cold. It's just right.
Awesome. So we were talking a little bit pre-show here, what's going on for your weekend this weekend. And why don't you just share briefly the good work that you are doing for your community and what's happening? Just give us a 20-second, 30-second blurb, because we don't get to share all the goodness that sometimes happens around us.
Yeah. So tonight we have a charity dinner. It's a nonprofit charity that works. It works for with orphanages. It's more of a religious based orphanage that works all the way from babies all the way up to high schoolers that we help support. And then we, on the weekend, on this Saturday, we're actually doing a barbecue for the homeless and for an underprivileged community. So I do that. And then Sunday's another barbecue where for our church that we go to, we are having a barbecue as we welcome everybody back from the summer. And we bless all the students that are going into school for this school year. So that's what I got going on this weekend.
Perfect. See, we got our good deed out of the way, our public service opportunity, and now we can get into the shit, right?
That's right. That's right. So, Brad, who do we got on the show today?
Today we have on the show Sam DeWitt. He is a self-proclaimed millennial zillennial. I got connected with him on LinkedIn. He's a master mechanic that specializes in CNCs. Growing his career into a leadership role and a trainer and developer, has his own show called Living the Dream, as you can see on the bottom there. He has, his experience is nothing short of interesting, right? Starting out in the laser world, then getting into sales, then doing some more laser and tube, central bar and tube, master mechanic now in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I am looking forward to hearing his stories as he's gone through the trades world and the manufacturing front. So Sam, thank you for being here, sir.
It's a pleasure to be on the show, guys.
You know what? They always say that until we get to the end.
Exactly. Just wait.
Hey, I've listened. I have listened to the show, so I'm aware of what I'm stepping off into. So let's go.
Thank you very much. You're the Oklahoma guy.
So I know Brad kind of already ruined my question, but we still are going to ask it anyways. The generation that you identify with, are you hanging out in the millennials crowd?
So I am, as the category goes, I am classified as a millennial, but as I said in the bio there, I identify as a millennial because I have the Gen X personality in a lot of how I go through.
So you're a dick is what you're trying to say.
Pretty much, yeah. That's most people that would introduce me, they'd be like, oh, Sam, yeah, he's a dick.
I can appreciate tough love. This.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I can appreciate the tough love.
Exactly. Yeah. So walk us through a little bit of how a guy starts out as a five-axis laser programmer to a master mechanic. Walk us through that journey, how you got there.
So I started off as, you know, everyone in my generation has been told to, you know, go to college and get a degree. I am a bachelor holding. It's a Bachelor of Technology with manufacturing emphasis, which is basically like the applied science of manufacturing engineering.
Okay.
I worked all through school because I decided that getting married and going to school at the same time was a great idea. And
sounds great. <yeah. laughs>
Yeah. So, you know, support a family, you work 40 plus hours a week in a blue collar trade, and then, you know, 18 hours a semester for 8 years. Mm-hmm. So I started that off. I had a couple of jobs that were using my degree and what field I thought I wanted to go into. My first one was right around 9/11, and I was in the aircraft industry. And as you all know, 9/11 happened. The aircraft industry took a dive. So I was riding a desk and I'm like, hey, I'm just overhead. I should find something that is more valuable. Plus, I'm not really digging this position. And there was a 5-axis laser. It was a Nippai Toyama Corporation TLM 610. That was my first experience in CNC. Went across with absolutely no experience whatsoever, but the company was willing to train me. So, let me rephrase that. The company was willing to put me in the position. They were banking on the operator training me. And
I was going to ask that question. Yeah. I was going to ask you what training really meant.
No, I got thrown into a position. I got thrown into that position. Not really thrown into. Let me rephrase that. I accepted the position, started working with the current operator. As I'm sure you've had some other guests on the episode that have talked about, the guy was more worried about me taking his job than he was actually training me. So I think I spent 6 months with him. He got fired. And then I had to learn everything.
So you did take his job.
Yeah, I did. I was there to take his job. Apparently, I wasn't aware of this, but there was a bigger picture that I wasn't included in on.
Mm-hmm. But if we break it down to his level, you did take his job.
I did. And and so as my degree worked, taught me was efficiency. That was one of the reasons why I went into the manufacturing engineering aspect of it was I always enjoyed trying to find a way to do something better, faster, more efficient. Cool. And so I took what was a 3-month backlog on that machine while training myself and got it to where they were 3 months ahead.
Wow.
So
how did I know that was going to happen?
Yeah, right?
How did I know all of a sudden you're going to work yourself out of it? Hey, we need more work. Go sell more. What do you mean to go sell more?
So that job came as it was. And, you know, I'm married, working full time, still going to college at the time. Mm-hmm. And, they had a very strict attendance policy. So I worked I attendanced myself out of a job.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The good news is 2 weeks later, I was back in another shop running the exact same machine, and they were more than happy about it. That's where the programming aspect of it came into play.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a small shop. So there wasn't big maintenance department.
So when you attendanced yourself out of the other position, did you put all the other things in place for the next guy that took your role to be successful, or did you keep it all to yourself?
No, there was work procedures. There was like all of that stuff. That was another thing too, is there was work instructions. There was processes in order for someone else to come along. Something that we had talked about in the pre-show interview was, you know, I always believe that you train yourself out of a job. Mm-hmm. Or at least make it to where
yourself out. One of the two.
Yeah. Well, you know, mistakes were made.
Yeah.
But you know, you train yourself out of a job so that way you have the opportunity to go somewhere else. And, you know, I mean, looking back on it, that was a good portion of my life to, you know, let me fall flat on my face when I had a gravy job. It was great. Anybody in their 20s would have loved to have had that job, but I had priorities wrong and made mistakes. So
I can understand completely.
Mm-hmm. So
we've all been there.
Moved into the other company, running the same machine. I kind of started the maintenance aspect of it because my stepfather worked at the same company. He was maintenance at that company. So when the machine broke or when I screwed up and crashed the machine, he would come in there and sit down in my chair and tell me how to fix it.
The unofficial, I have two jobs inside one company role.
Yeah.
Kid, you're going to learn this, whether you like it or not. And I don't care what my boss has to say about it. I'm going to teach you.
Well, and the best part of this is also the same man that told me, whatever you do, don't grow up and become a maintenance guy. Hi.
Hi.
I'm the maintenance guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Not only have I done it, but I've tried to do it very well. So it's one of those things, what is it? I do today what others won't, so I can do tomorrow what others can't.
Nice.
So I've got a little Hobby Lobby sign that I got, and I was like, I like that. That's going on the wall at the shop. So let's see, where are we at? So I got to the second part of it, got to, you know, running the same machine, moved into a maintenance role there. Started kind of doing some processes and procedures for forklift maintenance because they didn't have anything along that lines. Most of the forklifts had been there for 5-10 years. No one knew if the oil had ever been changed.
Did the seatbelts work?
They were there.
They were there.
They were there. They probably never used.
There was one time it was used and somebody picked up a sheet that was a little heavier than it should have been. And they had it a little higher than it should have been. Mm-hmm. And so they got to meet the steering wheel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So moved into the role there in maintenance, did some of the stuff. And long story short, ended up getting laid off there. Did some contract work for a calibration company, and that was kind of side work, cash under the table stuff. Oh man, trying to remember where all this. Don't really think back through all of this very often.
All right, but yeah. Anyhow, you end up being the master mechanic now, right?
So was that
going through an apprenticeship to get to the master mechanic designation, or is it just time and seat, or how did you get the designation?
So the designation was time and seat. I had worked through the calibration company as a contractor for my current employer, and they recognized talent and said, hey, you should apply. So,
and you're humble too.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they recognize the talent.
I guess. I mean, I don't know why they wanted me in there. So
must be the talent.
It had to be something. It's definitely not the ruggish good looks. But I applied because I was like, I was pretty happy with the gig that I had. So I had applied there before and didn't even get an email saying that I didn't even get an interview. So I was like, yeah, whatever, mm-hmm. I'll apply. And a couple of months later, I got a job offer. So, and then I've been there 8 years now. And it's been one of those deals that is probably one of the best companies I have worked for, just mainly because of the leadership that has been there. They definitely preach a servant leadership environment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that helped me to grow a lot in the company.
Good, because I was going to ask you how that, as you've gone through those various different organizations in your current organization, mm-hmm. What made leadership good or bad at those organizations along the way? I mean, you talk about that first stint where it was like, hey, come on in, have the operator teach you. And then you took over his job, and then mm-hmm. probably not the best leadership and training opportunities along the way.
No, it's been a variety of leaders. I've had good and bad over the years. The majority of the leaders that I have had that are memorable are the ones that I really felt like were doing what they could to help me grow, not hold my hand, but just to put me in the place and try to give me the tools that I needed to succeed. Mm-hmm. So I got, Bob was, he was the supervisor whenever I first started. And I got put in as the CNC guy because I had all of the CNC experience over the years. I'm like, yeah, okay, I ran them. That doesn't mean I know how to fix them. Mm-hmm. But
Well, you're the millennial guy. You're the tech guy. You should know this. What's the problem? Yeah. You're the youngest one. You should know better.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I get thrown into probably the most sophisticated equipment that we have. And I was 3 months into it. I went in and sat down in his office and told him, I said, I have oversold myself. I said, this is way over my head. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm sorry. And he goes, good. I'm like, what do you mean good? He goes, well, that means that, you know, you're willing to recognize your shortcomings. Now let's work on fixing that. And he was like, do you have manufacturer phone numbers? Yeah, call them. They've got technicians. Bring them in here. If you can't fix it, bring them in here and then stay glued to them and learn everything you can from them. And that's pretty much how it's been. And it was the empowerment and allowing me to struggle. And he did this differently with everyone too, because he was able to recognize strengths and weaknesses throughout the team, find out where they needed to grow, find out what they needed to grow. And it was a tremendous blessing to be under him. And I've talked about that on my show. And
well, then you need to introduce us to Bob so Bob can come on our show.
I will do the best that I can to see if we can get him on here. He's not a tech guy.
That's okay.
So that's okay.
That's okay. Somebody else can set up the tech for him. He just needs to talk and answer a few questions.
All right. We'll see. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
Because that adaptation and that ability to go forward and see what everybody's needs are is vitally important, particularly as the generations are getting younger in the workforce.
Right. Well, so, and he is humble, and he'll be like, oh, I didn't do anything. I just showed up to work. That was the way Bob was. And I've had, and honestly, what's funny is we have multiple facilities throughout the area. So I've been stationary in the same facility the entire time I've been there. So I've had leadership rotate through, and there's been different leaders over me throughout the 8 years. All of them are very similar, but just like little traits here and there different. But it's all still about empowering the technicians and giving them the ability to make decisions. Sometimes it's a wrong decision. Sometimes you drop $80,000 on parts and it doesn't have a damn thing to do with what's actually wrong with it.
Hey, let's replace the board. Let's see what happens. Oh shit. It's that switch that was downstream. Damn it.
Well, the damn cable was unplugged.
No. There's a reason why the cable companies go through their script. Right.
Yeah. Did you plug? Is it plugged in? Number one, is it plugged in?
Hey, that is one of the things that I have learned, because you get into the maintenance field and immediately it's, you know, worst case scenario. You're like, oh my God, the motor's bad. What am I going to do? How am I going to get this motor here? Whenever sometimes you just got to stop, just chill, take a deep breath. Does the damn thing have power? Is it plugged in? You know, sometimes it's a quick fix, and then other times you spend 2 weeks trying to find something that's failed internally in a piece of equipment, and there's no way that you could have done it, that you could have troubleshooted it. So,
I'm going to assume you have others on your maintenance team potentially.
Oh, yes.
So, how are you paying it forward to these other individuals on the team today?
So, I try to do everything I can. I've gotten to where, because I went to management and I was like, I'm getting bored. I need something different. And I never say
that. And when Sam gets bored, bad things happen.
So it was one of those things that I said, what do you think about, you know, training? And I'm like, if it gets me doing something different, fine. Let's go for it. And I've had good and bad experiences in training. And it's you have some people that are really receptive, and then there's other people that just put the tools down, and this is not the trade for you. And But I try to do, I've tried to, again, do the processes and procedures and make it to where, like, I've got spirals at the equipment that if there's common problems, this is a step-by-step with pictures and words to walk you through how to solve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
So,
because yeah. I was gonna ask, how are you taking because diagnostics is the hardest thing to teach, right? It is the most, because when you walk up to a piece of equipment that you've been seeing for 4 years, you've already jumped through 40,000 questions in your mind based right. on, did I smell something? Did I hear something? Did I see a drip over there that wasn't there yesterday? Whatever that might be, how are you working on the diagnostics piece? Because to me, that is one of the hardest pieces of training to get through an organization to be successful.
So we've actually taken a piece of plywood with some common breakers, switches, LEDs, little 120-volt fans, and then set it up to where you can literally use jumper wires to create circuits. And then on the backside of that is the instructor side, and we have toggle switches to create failures and have them go through and troubleshoot, you know, do you not have power here? Are you getting power there? Why is this fan not working? You know, just give them that basic. Now, granted, this is all basic stuff. It's a very controlled environment, but it still helps to give them that confidence to dive into something and be like, oh, I've seen something similar to this. Let's start checking for voltage.
Mm-hmm. And with doing that training method, how have you seen the different generations, I would say, adapt to that?
So I've seen, because I have the vast spectrum right now. Mm-hmm. I have a 19-year-old that is coming in as an apprentice right now that is picking it up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a baby boomer that is trying to get to a master mechanic level that seems to be struggling with that.
Mm.
And it's one of those deals that it's as a maintenance technician, I struggle with why, but then on the other hand, I get it, because what I struggled with coming into it was the mechanical stuff came second nature to me. That wasn't the problem. The electrical side of it is it's voodoo magic, you know.
It is. It's once the smoke is out of the tube, you can't put it back in. Once you lose electrons, you cannot recover your electrons.
Right. And once you actually see the electricity, you're already done. So
yep.
It's already too far at that point. So it's been really interesting to see that aspect of it, because you've got one person that you can show them and they can sit back and watch you, and then you step away and they can walk right in there and do it. And then the other one, you've almost got to question them through the whole process to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've had another one that just, it didn't matter what I tried, whether it was walking them through by questioning, kind of give them the opportunity to discover the answer on their own, or if it was just flat out telling them multiple times, these are the steps and procedures that you have to do in order to change oil.
Mm-hmm.
And they still failed. So it is one of those things that, and I don't want to say this for everybody, but I do feel like that in the maintenance aspect of it, you've got to have some innate ability. Like, some of it is teachable, but you've got to have some of those skills. And that's a hard thing right now, because there's not a lot of people that are really interested in, hey, you know, I want to work on broke stuff every day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes and no, right? Because there is the opportunity to do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much the, I want to work on broke stuff. It's how do I keep the value, right? So when you talk to youngers, they're going to have the, I'm going to bring value by keeping the machines working, not that they're broke, right? It's the,
right.
It's the, let's go create the win, not let's figure out why we lost mentality.
Right. And,
you know, so some of that is just marketing it differently and talking about it slightly differently, potentially.
Yeah.
Along the way, but they're different. It's not, nobody's working on their 2008 Pontiac, whatever it is, anymore to learn some of this stuff much from a high school perspective. And you're in a tough spot to try to capture new people to come in because those skill sets aren't there. And you got to figure out how to adapt,
right?
Adapt what they're, what they've grown up with into your language. And you've got to be a language whisperer and a analogy maker and, you know, pick something to make it work for them.
A lot of what, and this is one of the things that I try and portray on the podcast that I do is that it's, well, I say that I try to, it's what I've started to focus the podcast on. Let's put it that way, is that the, you know, the maintenance in the blue collar trade is not just the grit and grime that it used to be. There's more technology and stuff involved in it now than ever before. The simplest things anymore, like a freaking squeegee mop at a convenience store, like is now a robot that cleans the floor, you know? So it's not, you know, you're fixing a mop sink because it's leaking. You're figuring out why the little robot's not dumping off the dirty water or, you know,
because the dog hair got stuck in the thing.
Right. Right. So, you know, I mean, there's that aspect of it because the technology is what the coming up generation is familiar and comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is what the older generation is afraid of, is they don't, you know, they're like, I don't understand it, so I don't want to mess with it. Well, okay, but you kind of have to because it's part of your job. Mm-hmm. So you've got to adapt and change and grow or else you'll just be a widget maker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Boomer, did your VCR always flash 12 or were you able to figure out how to set the clock? Right. I mean, that, but I'm serious though. That's one question you could ask. Hey, oh no, my wife took care of that all the time. Well, then you might not have, if that didn't drive you crazy, flashing 12 o'clock on your VCR.
Yeah.
And you couldn't fix it. We're probably going to struggle to figure this out.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And you can have the want and the desire, but if you're not really willing to put forth the effort to learn it and try and understand it, then you're going to struggle with it. Right.
Yep. You got to create the analogies to make it fit into their era of things. Right. And it might find out what their favorite car was, or maybe they like cooking, or their hobby is smoking meat, right? Similar, right? There's an art and a science to that. Mm-hmm. Unless you got a pellet smoker, then you just turn the button and you're good.
Hey. There's still an art to the pellet smoker. Watch out there.
I have a pellet smoker too. It's super simple, right? The arc is, it's been 3 hours. I should wrap it now.
Wow. I also like the deal of the alcohol consumption. It's a lot easier there. If I have a stick burner, there's a good chance it's going to go out and I'm going to forget.
Awesome. All right, Steve, you want me to go back through the rapid fire?
Yes, I do.
All right, we're going to change. So we used to have a segment. It was kind of bite your tongue. We're going to get away from that. We're going to try something different. These are rapid fire questions.
Oh, boy.
First response.
Okay.
They're not difficult. They're not overly complex.
No, they're not complex at all.
Okay.
Favorite candy?
Werther's.
Werther's.
Oh, Werther's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
All right.
Did you spend a lot for of time a loop at- on that one? You weren't ready for that.
No, we were not. Did you spend a lot of time at your grandparents' house or something or what?
I did.
Uh-huh. See, there's a reason for those. Favorite music?
EDM.
Would not have guessed that.
No, not at all.
Would not have guessed that one.
All right, two for two so far. Two for two.
Favorite sport? Won't say Quidditch.
No.
Racing. What kind of racing?
Anything that goes fast with a motor. It doesn't matter if it's dirt track, asphalt, whatever. If it's if it goes fast and it's loud, I love it.
Okay, now we got to break it down. Favorite racing of what? Are we talking NASCAR, F1, Indy, motocross, trucks? What are we talking?
So trophy trucks, definitely. Actually, arena trucks is probably my favorite because there's nothing like seeing 700 horsepower on three wheels going around a turn. Mm-hmm. Sprint car is a favorite dirt option. 410s, because if it's not big, why? And it doesn't have a wing, why watch it? and
I like this.
And then, let's see. It's just good old fashioned streetcar racing, man. Perfect. Just the drag and drive events are killer. There's nothing better than seeing a 1600 plus horsepower vehicle traveling 1,000 miles, towing all of its parts and supplies from track to track for 5 days and laying down insane passes.
Awesome. All right. How bucket list vacation destination?
Ooh, Australia.
Nice. It's a cool, it's a very, very Summer cool Knots. Place. It's a, it's a very cool place. Living or dead, who would you want to have a conversation with?
Henry Ford.
Why Henry Ford?
He has a statement that I loved whenever I was going through college that was, whether you think you're right or you're wrong, you're
correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Ginger or Marianne?
Ginger. Ginger, fine. We'll give you that one. I have no idea.
I mean, you got to know the context, Brad. Like,
I know.
I feel like
he's not a Gilligan's Island guy. That's okay.
No, I can't
go back to Warner Brothers. I can't go back to any, right? The old,
no.
You know, so it's okay. We just had that. We had to ask. That's,
I mean, he did go with Werther's original, like Werther's, like,
right.
I mean,
exactly. So there should have been reruns in there, right?
Yeah.
At some point, there was, but not much. It was more of Green Acres and the other one's escaping me currently.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Beverly Hillbillies. Yeah.
Those two go together usually.
Yeah.
Well, I'm originally from Kentucky, so, you know, the hillbilly thing kind of plays into it.
So if people want to listen to your show, get involved, be engaged, or if we've got some other maintenance folks that are listening that want to understand how you are creating successful programs, etc., how do people find you, get a hold of you, where do they connect with you?
So I'm on LinkedIn as both Sam DeWitt and Living the Dream Podcast. We're on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Patreon. And we're on Apple Music and Spotify if you guys want to listen. YouTube uploads are kind of spotty at the moment because we're just kind of, or I say we're, this is a one-man show.
I was going to say we. Who's the we? You got a mouse in your pocket or what?
Well, it started off as three guys sitting around a table drinking beer and just talking shit about work. If you go listen to episode one, the beginning, that's pretty much what it is. It just kind of tells who we are and what we did. So it was three of us together started the podcast, and it just kind of morphed. I moved and we got to be an hour apart, and I just couldn't let it die. I don't know why. I just felt like there was some need to continue on. So yeah,
Steve keeps hanging on here too. I don't know.
I just hang out long for the ride or die.
Exactly.
Hey, it's a lot of fun, man. And you get to meet some pretty interesting people. And I know I will say, like, you know, this is not sponsored or anything, but LinkedIn is a tremendous place to connect on. And it's how we met.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great opportunities to meet people in different trades and stuff like that. So I've got some people that are going to be on our show that I'm really looking forward to sharing with everybody, and, you know, hope to see y'all there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Excellent. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, sharing your stories, sharing your journey. It helps our audience understand the goods, the bads, and the uglies as well. So thank you so much.
Not a problem.
All right, man. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
All right. Later.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.